We've been living out of our car for the past 3 and some weeks, pretty much. We've been visiting congregations seeking support, and we've met with some of the cream of the crop, I guess, really, really good brethren. And there are some congregations that we'll be supporting along with this congregation, and we thank you as well as those congregations that are going to be supporting us in this work. The Bahamas, which is kind of different for all the other congregations, is just a half hour away from you guys. Everyone else was in Alabama and Oklahoma and those states and those areas. But you guys are really close. So when I invite you, I expect you to come. So we're going to start we broke our work up into phases. Let me get this thing on. I believe if I turn it on, it might work. There we go. Phase one. We've broken our work up into phases, and we start with the first phase. First of all, the Bahamas, if you don't already know, is an archipelago of islands. Now, I've had a lot of Americans ask me, don't we own that? And I'm like, no, you don't. but it's an independent country, and it's an archipelago of islands. Grand Bahama is the one that's highlighted up there. That's where we are from, and that's where the work will start. As you can see, we're really close. We're roughly 53 miles off the coast of Palm Beach. So we're closer to Palm Beach than we are to any other place in the United States. So I know you guys will be coming. But that's a map of the islands. This is a picture of the congregation that is located in the Freeport area of the island. We have roughly about 100 to 120 members there. The congregation has elders and deacons, two elders, and has deacons. The age of the church is roughly 2 years older than me, and if I can remember my age, I can generally tell you how old the church is. But it's about 41 years old, roughly. And so it existed since then, and now they have a building that they own and worship in. This is a close-up of the island of Grand Bahama that was highlighted a bit earlier. The area that we plan to do the work in is that area that's highlighted there at this time. It's called 8 Mile Rock. Now, there has been a really important question asked of me in the elders' meeting, and it is, why is it called 8 Mile Rock? And, of course, the answer is, I don't know. I'm not sure. I really don't think it's eight miles, but one of the elders took out his phone and he went on Google and he said, yes, it's eight miles long. I don't know, but I'm going to measure it and find out and get that information to you guys, because that's really, really, really important. But 8 Mile Rock is the community where we plan to start the work. 8 Mile Rock has between 10 and 20,000 people, I would imagine. That's one of the information that we have to go. That's some of the information that we have to find out when we get home, to kind of know what we are working with. But my guesstimation would be around there. But we, my wife and I, grew up in this area. She lived maybe 3 or 4 miles from where I lived. But this is where we plan on starting the work. Now, if you look on the map, you can see there's a little icon of a church building, and there's a little arrow pointing to where they worship. That's where the congregation that exists is on the island, and that's the Freeport area. We live roughly about 25 minutes away. For the islanders, that's pretty far. The island is only 96 miles long, and so relatively speaking, that's far. But it may be far, too, because gas is about $5 a gallon. And so that's pretty high for gas. And I noticed as we drove down from those states, as we got closer to Florida, the gas prices kept going up. And as we go over the seas, it's just going to go all the way up. And I don't know what's up with that. I don't understand it, but it seems like the gas on this side is better. So I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. But 8 Mile Rock is where we're going to start our work. We want to start a congregation in this community. This community, like I said, is 25 minutes away. There are a good number of people that we can work with. So we as soon as we hit the ground, we plan to start the congregation in that area. Eventually, we want to move to the western end of the island, which is up there. That is about half hour from where we live. I'm not doing that, by the way. It's not me. But it's about half hour from where we live, and we eventually want to venture to that part of the island and start a congregation there. That's kind of in the future. And then we want to move to kind of the other end of the island where there are little clusters of towns. They're kind of like half hour or more apart from each other. So that is some of the work we are looking at to do in the future. Now, on our island, we have a lot of different denominations. And it seems as if the Church of God of Prophecy is the most dominant of them all. And as I have said to the elders, congregations like the Church of God, Baptist, Anglican, Pentecostal, don't really have a doctrine. Maybe the Anglican has more of a doctrine than the others, but they don't really have a doctrine. And even though that's a bad thing, because of course we should have a doctrine as Christians, well, they don't have a doctrine, so that makes it good for us to teach them truth. In our experience with teaching these people, when they hear the truth for the first time, they are excited about it. And they want to tell others. And so that is a good thing. Movements like the Seventh-day Adventists and the Jehovah Witnesses and others, a few others, they have a doctrine, which makes it difficult for us to reach them. And so the dominating congregations or denominations, being the Church of God of Prophecy and others like them, the ones that we can meet, and they're the dominating ones. So that works in our favor. So we want to take advantage of that fact. To start this congregation, though, we have a number of milestones that we want to meet. We have a 30-day milestone where we want to reach out to those who have left the faith. Those who have left the faith at some point in time in the past, we want to reach out to them and try to restore them back. Now, we understand that some of them will probably be restored and decide to worship with the Freeport congregation. We don't have a problem with that. We're all in the same business. But some of them will probably worship with us. Either way, we're going to start with the delinquent members, those who have left the faith completely. Those are the ones who we want to start with, the lost sheep. Then we want to work our way towards the married folks in our community, those who are married, because we do realize that there's strength in marriages. If you have a solid marriage in a congregation or a number of them, you have a good congregation. The more strong families you have, the stronger your congregation would be, spiritually speaking. I'm not talking about anything else, only spiritual. If they are spiritually strong, you will have a spiritually strong congregation. And so we want to reach out to some of those who are lost and already married first. And if we can convert a father and a mother, chances are we can eventually convert children of one of those. So we want to reach out to those people next. Then we also want to reach out to children. Now, the good thing about reaching out to children is, first of all, on Sunday mornings, there are a lot of children running around and playing, and really they don't do anything. And so if we can get them to come to service and we could teach them, within the next 15 years or so, maybe 10, 15 years, we can have some really strong Christians. At the least, these children will know the gospel, and they will have all the tools they need to make that decision. And so we want to reach out to some children. And if you want to change any community, any country, you start with the children. And of course, it's a slow work, and you won't see fruits right away. But it's one of those things that will definitely yield greatly. So we want to definitely take advantage of that. Now, I don't know if anyone here is familiar with Kids Sing, but I believe you guys are familiar with Glenn Colley. If you're not, you probably will in the future, so I've heard. But anyway, Glenn Colley has created what is called Kids Sing, and it's designed to teach children the fundamentals of the gospel. And so we want to take advantage of a program like that, and it's free, it's available. So we want to go online and take advantage of Kids Sing and teach these children the fundamentals of the Bible. And once again, we look forward to seeing these children grow in God's Word in the future. We also have done some work with teens, and we want to continue doing that. GYMA, Growing Young Minds Association, is a teen group that we started some years ago, and we are thinking about going ahead and rekindling that flame and working with some teens in that area. So we'll see how that goes also. But we want to take advantage of every single opportunity, free avenues to spread the gospel, such as Facebook and Twitter and whatever is available to reach people. So we want to exhaust everything that is either affordable or free to try and reach people. One of the things that is well received in the Bahamas is radio talk shows and anything that's radio. People still listen to radio in the islands. And so if we can get on the air, people like to talk about sports, politics, and religion. We can get to reach some people and teach some people truth. And so we want to take advantage of that avenue. And I really, as far as I know, don't think there's a religious talk show that exists in the Bahamas right now where you can call in and ask questions and kind of talk with people live. And so we if we can be the first to do that, that might be a good thing. Now, in terms of demographics, Bahamian people are generally literate. And why is that important? Well, you don't want to knock a door and ask someone to read the Bible and they can't read it. So it is helpful that people are able to read, so when you study with them, you can communicate God's word with them effectively. So that's a good thing and a plus for us. And we have a university that's local, so people are generally educated on the island. At the least, we can communicate with them through words on a page, which is very, very important when it comes to spreading the gospel. The local language is English, if you didn't know that already. We do have some immigrants that speak Creole, and we have a plan to reach even those people also, but English is the language of the locals. So as I mentioned, the lost sheep is who we're going to go for first. Couples, we're going to go for the children and also our families and friends. So we want to try and reach those who we know. Most of our families live in these areas, both my wife's family and mine. So we know a lot of people in these areas. So we want to take advantage of the fact that we know them. People generally are willing to sit and study with you if you know them. You get a better response if they know you and you know them than to try to study with a stranger. So we'd have to get to know the stranger before we generally could get a sit down and talk Bible study. But we'll start with those who we know. These are some of the things that we did before we left home, and we want to rekindle most of them, if not all, and keep them going. Our second phase, we plan to do an island-wide door-knocking campaign. This is where you guys come in. We have a 12-month block where we want congregations such as this to send groups of people to the island to help us door knock. Small groups, not really large, manageable groups, to help us door knock within that 12-month period. A group would, for example, come in and knock doors for about a week or so, and they would probably get Bible studies. They'll probably get to know some people. Whatever information they get, they will hand it over to the incoming congregation, the incoming group, and they will continue that work, and it'll go on for a period of about 12 months. Now, I would imagine we can cover the island within the first 3 months or so. It's only about 48,000 people on the island. And so I believe we can knock those doors within the first 3 months or so. Well, Bible studies will probably have to continue going on even after that time. Plus, we have a really extensive plan of things that we want to do within that time also while we have the help. We can go into schools still in the Bahamas. The Church of Christ, it's not uncommon for us to be invited or to ask to come in and be a part of an assembly, for example, of students. And so we want to take advantage of avenues such as that. We also want to start Bible clubs or that kind of thing in the schools, mission to spread the gospel. And the bottom line of any venture we take on is to spread the gospel. That's the bottom line. So we may take a slightly different approach, but our mission is to teach people about God. But we can still get in the school system, so we want to take advantage of that while it still exists, because we generally are not far behind the United States on some of the choices the government makes. And so at this time, we can get into schools. We want to take advantage of that while it exists. And there are some other things that we want to do during that time, such as counseling, family counseling, marriage counseling. Those are some of the things we want to do. We know some brethren in the brotherhood, and we're still trying to find some more who are capable of counseling families in and out of the congregation, out of the church, with some of the issues we have at home. For example, fidelity is one of the issues we are faced with marriages. And so we have done some of that in the past, and we want to continue that, and we want to kind of make it, do it on a bigger scale. And so that's one of the things we have planned for that period, a 12-month period, while we have people coming in and going out. So we're hoping that congregations like this and others can be a part of that venture in some way or another. There are so many aspects of that venture that you can be a part of, even if you don't come to the island. For example, we want to collect statistics on these people as we go out and knock these doors. And there's going to be need to be people to enter the data into some computer software. We're not sure what we're going to use yet, but the point is we're going to need computer-savvy people who are able to use whatever software we decide to use, whether it be Excel or whatever, to enter this data so at the end of the day we can have some data on the island, the people. What are their thoughts on whatever it is, religiously or whatever it might be. Information that we never got in the past and probably never will if someone don't step up to the plate. So we want to take advantage of that opportunity also while we do this 12-month campaign. Phase three, as I mentioned, we have issues with fidelity and family issues in the Bahamas. We do have a lot of single parents parent homes, and it's generally the mother who is the parent in these situations. And so we want to kind of help in some way these parents deal with having children just on their own without a father in the house. For example, I was one of those people who did not have a father in the home. My dad, he has since passed away, I think 3 years ago. But he was never, my mom and him were never married, and he never really grew me up. I mean, I would communicate with him sometimes, but he didn't grow me up. My mom did the best she could do, and I believe she did a wonderful job. But there are some things a woman cannot teach a man. There's no way a woman can teach a young man to be a man. There are some things that are going to be missing. And so if you can get a male figure to be involved in that child's life, it can help him tremendously in becoming what he is supposed to be in society and in the church. And so we want to kind of curtail some of the issues we are struggling with in our country with this particular problem. So counseling and marriage seminars are some of the things we want to put in place, and other community programs to kind of aid the family in some of the issues they struggle with. We want to be transparent in every single thing that we do. We encourage people to come to the island at any time, announced or unannounced. We just ask one thing of anyone who is coming: bring your working boots, because we will put you to work. And there's a lot of work to do. So we encourage you to come. And if you do come and you decide you're going to announce you're coming, we may be able to help you to find a place to stay that you wouldn't have to pay for. If you have some financial issues, we can probably kind of curtail that a little bit by finding a place for you to stay while you are on the island. But you don't have to announce you're coming. But we have some things planned for the future. We have planned in 2019, as I mentioned, the door knocking campaign. In 2020, we also have what is called Legacy Camp. It's a family camp hosted by a gentleman, a brother in Oklahoma. And it's a camp that is ongoing even now. It's an annual camp. And it's very successful. Well, we want to start family camps in the Bahamas. So he's going to bring Legacy Camp to our island to kind of give us a boost so that we could get out there and we can have successful camps following 2020. So he's going to come to the island in 2020, and we're going to have that camp. We also have planned, which is not on this board, a preacher's training camp. And this is for young boys, teenagers. A gentleman out of Oklahoma also is going to be a part of that, and probably some others. We're still working on this one. But it's a camp designed to teach young men how to prepare a sermon, how to preach, how to knock doors, that kind of thing. So we want to teach these young men those kinds of things, but we are also inviting some of the older guys on the island to come and be a part of it and come and learn some of those things while we have people who can teach it on the island. That's one of the other things we have planned for 2020. If you're familiar with polishing the pulpit, you might be familiar with PTP Sparks, polishing the pulpit sparks. It's a smaller version of polishing the pulpit. Now, if you've ever been to polishing the pulpit, you know that they have anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000 people in one place on Sunday morning worshiping. This is huge. PTP Sparks is not that large. It's a bit smaller, but it goes around the country from different state, from state to state. But they, this year, are going international. This year is going to be held in India. In 2020, it's scheduled to be held in Grand Bahama. And so we have to kind of plan for that as soon as we get home. We're in communication with the board of polishing the pulpit. And so we're working on plans for PTB Sparks 20. Did I say 2020? I meant 2021. It's in 2021. And if you got one of those pamphlets, you should see scheduled for the Bahamas 2021 on one of the PTP Sparks pamphlets. We also want to start a school, a secular school where we teach secular knowledge. The reason why is because if we have a private school, we can teach the gospel. We can teach children the fundamentals of God's word from preschool all the way to grade 12. That's roughly 12 years, 13 years. Or even in some cases more if we have even younger children. But we can teach these children for a large block of their life and the most important part of their life, their developing stages. We can teach them about God. This school has been spoken of before by some of the brethren there who are teachers, but it never really got off the ground. And so I'm going to kind of continue talking with them about it, and we're going to try and get some things concrete and make it happen. We don't have a date on it yet. This is kind of future. But as soon as we know, we're gonna let y'all know what our plans are and how we're going to go about this. What I want to see happen is I'd like to see all the teachers in the school system be Christians. If every teacher is a Christian, we don't have to worry about the direction they're going to take when they teach these children. We want them to apply God's word in every single aspect of their education somehow. And there are programs that exist that already do that. My wife homeschools, and that is exactly what she uses, and she also inserts the Bible wherever she can when she teaches. That is kind of the direction we want to go in. We do not have enough Christians who are teachers in the Bahamas to fill this school up with the teachers we probably need. And so we're going to ask teachers in America, we're so close, why not, who are Christians, to come and be a part of this venture. And there are some teachers who have already expressed interest in coming to the Bahamas to work. Some who are talking about retiring and coming there and working as teachers full time. And so this is a venture that is pretty big, but very possible and very likely. And so we're going to go after it with all that we have. Because like I said earlier, and I know you guys agree, if you want to change a nation, start with the children. And you can do so much by starting with the little ones and growing them up in God's word. We also would like to sometime also in the future start a preaching school in the Bahamas that could kind of be a hub for the Caribbean of islands as well as our islands. Preaching school is a really, really good venture. My experience in preaching school I've learned so much, not only about preaching, but so many other things. One of the things that was really, really good is that we went to any number of lectures within 1 year. I mean, the amount of lectures we attended and the amount of brethren that we met, the amount of connections that we have, the amount of knowledge that we have received just from the lectures alone is insurmountable. And so preaching school is actually a good thing. And if you can teach men to teach, to preach, and to go out and knock doors and win souls, and then send them back to their home island to work in the Caribbean, that would be a really good work, I believe. And so we want to go after that also. We have some international seminars planned. I've been in talks with people like Brother Glenn Colley, who are excited about being a part of these kinds of works. And so there are some people who are serious about this, and I'm excited about it. And with the prayers of congregations like this and God's help, these things can happen. I mean, we can do this. The good thing about ventures like Door Knocking, you send a group over to Door Knock, and when they realize the amount of people they reach, they realize the amount of work that they can they took on and were able to accomplish. They come back to their home congregations fired up and ready to do the same. And so this is the kind of work that not only would help us, but in a lot of ways it'll help other congregations also. And this is just from my own experience. And so this is work that can be done, and I know it's pretty big. My wife says I'm the dreamer and she's the realist. I think if you can't dream, you probably won't be able to accomplish things that are big. Everything you accomplish might probably be really small, and so you have to dream sometimes. A lot of things I've accomplished in life was because of a dream, and a lot of people were afraid to do certain things in life because they never dreamed. And so we can do this, and with congregations like this on our side, I believe we can be unstoppable. God is for us. That's number one. There's no one that can be against us. They can try, but we can accomplish anything with the help of God. The amount of people in the Bahamas is roughly 300 and some thousand people. The amount of people in the church in the United States is about 2 million some. We are 53 miles off the coast of Florida, our island. There's one island that's a little bit closer than us. But the point is, the proximity of the Bahamas to the United States is so close. I mean, if a percent, just 1% of the church visited the islands, we would be saturated with Christians. I mean, totally saturated, just 1%. Imagine if 1% of the church came and did some work in the Bahamas. I mean, we can do much work in that small country. And I think that would be a great motivator for people who live in certain communities and realize that you can win. If you look at the whole United States, it may seem overwhelming. If you look at the whole state of Florida, it may seem overwhelming. But if you start with that community where you are, you may realize that it's not so overwhelming, and it's very possible to do really, really good work just where you are. Our budget, as I mentioned before, we want to be transparent in all things. We have a cost to relocate. Everything, for everything, there's a cost. And we have left work to work full-time with the congregation at home that we're going to start. And of course, we need support and adventure for ourselves. Just to relocate home, these are some of the costs associated with that. In the Bahamas, the cost of items are kind of high. And as I've mentioned before, the cost of gas is pretty high there. Imagine this: to sell an item, you own a store and you have an item that you want to sell. Well, in order to first of all get that item, you have to travel to Florida or get it from somewhere outside the country, because we don't produce anything. That's number one. You get that item, first of all, you have to travel to Florida. There's a cost associated with getting here. You got to rent a car, get a hotel, and then you go to that company and you purchase that item. You get the item, you take it home. There's a cost to get it home. When you get there, the government is going to charge you taxes on that item. So there's another cost. You put that item on the shelf. Every shelf has to pay rent, basically. Every item on the shelf has to pay to be there, because you got to pay the light bill and the water bill and whatever else is associated with you owning this store. And so once you have tacked on all those costs, then you can now say, let me add the profit. So then you have to add profit to that item. And so by the time you sell that item, it's about 2-3 times more than you paid for it. And so that kind of gives you the idea of the cost of living when it comes to purchasing items in the islands. It's really high. However, if you bought a piece of land and you build a house on it, you don't have to pay taxes. It's yours. You don't owe the government anything. It's your house, which is really good. So I don't know if it balances out, but it is expensive to purchase items, but it's affordable to own a home. For us to ship the vehicle that we have to the island, which we will ship the vehicle that we own, that we're in even tonight, to the island, we have to pay 82% of the value of that car. 82% is almost like repurchasing another car. It's really high, but that's what it is. We don't produce vehicles in the Bahamas, so everything is imported in. And amazingly, there are some really, really nice cars on the island. People must have a lot of money. But we have to spend about $9,800 just to get our car to the island. They charge you for the shipping. They include the shipping and anything associated with you getting that car to that island as costs. And then they charge you, they tax you on that, and then they tax the tax and tax the tax of the tax. And you guys know how it goes. But that's pretty much how it goes. And this is kind of an idea of what our costs look like. There are some other costs associated with that. If you guys have any questions, you may ask me afterwards. I'm out of time, and so you don't get to ask now. But come and see me afterwards if you have any questions or comments, or you just want to talk. That's fine, too. Thank you all.